The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
What is going on, people? Welcome to Throwdown, episode 474. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
What's up, people? How's it going?
Chris Seeley.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo.
Brett Murdoch.
What up, people?
Richard Bailey Jr.
What's up, everybody?
And Brian Manjoma.
What up, what up?
Yeah, man. I hate to tell it to you guys, man, but I don't know what we're going to talk about this week. It's kind of boring. Nothing happened. Slow week in gaming. Not, you know, another one.
Uh-oh. Man,
another one of these fucking weeks, you know, a bloodbath. More people were laid off from the industry. A couple weeks ago, maybe about a month ago, it was Microsoft, right? Laid off like almost 2,000 employees. Now it's Sony's turn to lay off PlayStation employees. 900 people have been axed. And one of the most fucked up one is a London studio completely gone. And literally a week before this, Jim Ryan was at the same studio celebrating him leaving. And he knew all those people were going to get canned and nobody knew. Ain't that something? Manny, you're muted.
Yeah. Kind of messed up. I mean, you know,
they were there celebrating him and then, you know, give him the boot.
Yeah. Celebrating him. Yeah. He had to have known. It's not like they just made this spot decision. You know, decisions like this don't take, they take time. So that means he literally needed to stand in the room with all the people with the studio that he was literally going to close. How fucked up is that?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And y'all out there are like, God, Jim did a great fucking job. What are we seeing now? All the shit that this motherfucker put into place, all of it collapsed. And there's friggin' operation costs and all this other shit is all fucking out of control. And this motherfucker just leaps out before all this stuff starts to hit. How much do you want to bet that this, you know, this again, this is speculation. How much do you want to bet that this motherfucker didn't know what the fuck was coming down the line and wanted to get the fuck out before out of Dodge before it all hit him?
Yeah, pretty much. Go ahead, Brian.
Oh, I think that was me.
Okay.
Yeah, that man, when I saw that picture after the fact, because we all saw that picture when it's like, oh, you know, these guys just celebrating Jimbo and stuff, you know, giving them a head nod and congrats for the retirement. Is it a retirement or I don't even remember. But
yeah, it's a retirement.
But yeah, it's like you see that picture and you're like, okay, cool. And then less than a week later, it's like, yeah, that whole team was axed. So it's kind of fucked up. Well, it's not a kind of, it's really fucked up. You just go to a studio to get your farewell tour and now you're just axing them and putting them back in the streets. It's like, man, hopefully they got a good severance package or something. I don't know how things work over there. It's a UK studio.
According to a lot of the things, you know, because all the studios that they had let go of and, you know, let go of people at, they said they supposedly have a replacement, you know, a job center or something
like that. But that's not severance. Job replacement is just a way to get the to grease the wheels, and it's not a good practice because very often if you are laid off and you want to move into like a different career or transition, they can't help you with that. They usually only work in the industry that hires them to do the job replacement, which means so if it's video games and development, that's what you're doing, or they can't help you. So it sucks. That's not a severance.
Yeah. So I want to read this real quick. This is from CNBC here, because even Normie News is covering this, you know. Sony Interactive Entertainment on Tuesday said it will lay off about 900 employees in its PlayStation unit, or 8% of its global workforce, becoming the latest technology company to announce headcount trims. And there's a quote here: after careful consideration and many leadership discussions over several months, it has become clear Changes need to be made to continue to grow the business and develop the company. The unit's president and CEO, our boy Jim Ryan, said in an email to employees released publicly by the company. Again, he knew these motherfuckers were going to get canned and crazy. Jim Ryan added that employees across all of the company's regions will be affected by the layoffs. PlayStation's London studio will close in its entirety, with several other studios to be affected. The Japanese gaming giant cut its sales forecast for its flagship PlayStation 5 console on February 14th after it warned of lower demand. Sony at the time said it expected to sell 21 million units of the PlayStation 5 in its fiscal year ending in March, trimmed from the previous forecast of nearly 25 million consoles. Chris covered all of that in the previous episode. The company shares plunged sharply after the forecast cut announcement. We also talked about that. Analysts had anticipated that Sony could move to release a refresh version of the PS5 this year, seeking to boost interest in the console. Talking about the PS5 Pro. Tuesday's announcement from Sony is the latest in a string of layoffs affecting the tech industry. In January, Microsoft laid off about 9% of its gaming unit after its acquisition of Activision Blizzard. Earlier this month, Cisco and DocuSign both announced plans to cut their workforces as part of the restructuring programs. And we're going to talk about all the other companies that are laying people off. Sony shares were down 0.3% on Tuesday. So I guess, shareholders weren't too happy about what happened. Some fucked up shit, man. It's just, I remember near the beginning of the year, like, we were talking about this article that was posted on Game Industry Biz, where an industry analyst said that 2024 was going to be a bloodbath in the industry. And so far he's been right, fucking insane. Matter of fact, I want to go all over some of these real quick. I want to give a shout out to my boy Mr. Pio here on Twitter. He actually documented all this stuff. So here's all the layoffs that have happened just this year alone. And remember, this is March 1st now, effectively. So 2 months this has all happened. Microsoft laid off 19,000 people, Sony 900, Unity 1,800. Damn, almost as many as Microsoft. Twitch 500, Riot Games 530, Discord 170, Playtika 300 to 400, Lost Boys Interactive 125, Pixelberry Studios 120, Metaverse World 70, Black Forest Games 50, Raycon Games 60, Eidos Montreal 97, Sega of America, I didn't even know about that one, 61 people, 91 Acts 60, Supermassive Games, 90 people. And this doesn't even include EA. We're going to talk about that,
Tony, I'm surprised you didn't hear about the Sega one. You didn't see the memes on Twitter?
They
put Young Ye's face on the girl from Forspoken. And he's like, I killed a company with my freaking voice. That was all over the place.
Oh, man. Is that... Okay, I didn't understand. Okay, so I saw the memes, but I didn't know it was pertaining to that.
To the Sega layoffs, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good fucking choice, wasn't it, Chris, what's your take on all these layoffs, man?
Well, I mean, I saw a thing today, and I shared it. Somebody was talking about the Crash 85, the video game Crash, and he's like, oh, and he listed all these things. Now, the only thing I agree with is, like, Nintendo's the only game company right now that seems stable. Everyone else is shedding people, and, I mean, when I went over the quarterly report from Sony, the thing I commented on was the extraordinary expense that accounted for the discrepancy between their sales revenue and their operating income. It was a huge difference, and that they were focusing on their adjusted IDA numbers. And I was like, that's really weird. They're really focusing on that. That's because they had the huge expense of fighting the Activision Microsoft merger,
yeah.
Litigation across multiple countries, and that was a really bad gamble, right? And now who pays for it? The guys at London Studio, all these guys are getting laid off. But that's just Sony's issue. Like EA, I don't understand that statement. I read the letter from what's his name, Andrew House.
Yeah.
And I was like, talking about, we're not going to focus on underperforming IPs and whatever. So I was like, what, are you just going to make Madden? What are you going to do? What is performing for you besides the sports games? I don't know if it's a combination of just horrible management, bad playing, or it's just, hey, we're kind of in a recession, economic downturn, so people aren't have discretionary income to spend on entertainment, and everything is kind of taking a downturn. A combination of all those things. I don't know.
Here's a question. So when all of this, the pandemic stuff happened, right? Did Nintendo adjust themselves at all? Like, in other words, did they change their projections because of the pandemic, or did they just remain the same?
No, they didn't change anything.
So they were the only smart ones during the pandemic to essentially keep the same projections as before.
Well, the thing with that, right? When the pandemic happened, and a lot of people were, working remote or locked down, or remote learning. Entertainment boomed at that point. Like, game sales skyrocketed, right? People had a lot more time at home. And so I don't know if it's that EA and all these companies scaled up thinking they could keep up that momentum.
That's actually that's what I wanted to go, and I'm going to just ask the question directly, because, yeah, we do know that a lot of these companies basically overhired, like, because things were booming during that time. Yeah. Like, we could hire more people, more money's coming in. Nintendo, they didn't hire any
people. They don't do that, yeah. Yeah, so they pretty much stay the same.
Yeah, because right now, I hate to use this term, but I'm just going to say, right now, they're pretty much trimming the fat. They overhired, because they thought, the good times are going to keep going, not thinking ahead, So, yeah, I guess Nintendo was smart. Actually, I want to read that tweet, Chris. Hopefully we don't get too much trouble, but we're going to be quoting our boy, Mr. Razorfist here. This is a great tweet. He goes, the year is 1985. The major video game companies have, in a fit of unfettered hubris, destroyed their entire business model. The gaming market crashes like Ted Kennedy's Oldsmobile. A company called Nintendo inherits the entire industry. Nah, just joshing. It's 2024. Isn't that fucking scary? The prospect of, a second video game crash, and Nintendo's like, all right, we're doing this again. Hey, wouldn't that be something?
You guys pointed out, I knew Microsoft was guilty of the overhiring.
Yeah,
they definitely. Mm-hmm. And look, they've shed the most people. Not just overhiring in Xbox. Microsoft overhired in every freaking segment of their company. They laid off last year, I think, over 10,000 people.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So. You have all this like shedding of people, and it's happening in multiple companies, and tech in general, just falling off. But Nintendo stayed consistent, and so I guess that accounts for it. But also, there was another guy listed that we're getting more lower quality games, and one thing I think it's not just. Not that the games are bad, but like a lot of this, kind of meeting DEI quotas and all this stuff, has hurt the industry. It's hurt every industry. It's hurt comic books. It's hurt movies. It's hurting video games now. So you have a downturn in sales too. It's like you have games that just Forspoken flopped. Saints Row, the Volition shut down. After that failed.
Suicide Squad WB,
Yeah, that's the latest thing, yeah. So Sweet you Baby just have
Inc., that's a whole other thing
right there. Yeah, it's a kiss of death on games now. People are aware of it. Like, if you look at the Steam comments, people are you see a ton of comments. People are like, I'll never buy a game if these people are involved in it, That's it.
Yeah, I don't blame them, yeah. Somebody said they're the successful feminist frequency, kind of. But no, you're right. All those things. By the way, that's a larger conversation to be had. I don't know if I don't want to get too into it now, but I'm just like, okay, you're doing all this DIE stuff. I'm calling it that die stuff, right? To get money from BlackRock. But if you end up losing a ton of money in the end, was it worth it? The overhiring, that didn't help. And now we're just seeing all this, and like you said, the economy's not doing too great. It's fucking brutal, yeah, man.
Every single one of them should have readjusted. They should have readjusted their projections for the following year. But every single time, their investors are always looking to, you know, oh, you're gonna make more. No, they really should have cut it back down again. And then if they did actually go past those original numbers, they'd be like, hey, look, we did better than our projections. Hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Right. And that's worrisome going forward, because if you think about Sony's strategy that was part of the Insomniac leak, they're going to try to make up for this downturn with price hikes. Across the board price hikes. Like, you're talking $70, $80, $90 games base price. Or the pricing strategy of releasing piecemeal titles and charging full price for each part. And that's a horrible strategy.
Yeah, and then obviously, go ahead, Chris, go ahead.
No, that was it.
No, and then obviously the other conversation that sprung up from this is, you know, something we've been talking, that our boy Sean Layden brought up many, many years ago, how, you know, AAA game development is unsustainable, because now it's like these companies are losing money, but they're spending a shit ton of money on a select few games to hopefully do well. Like, for example, Spider-Man 2, right? Cost $315 million to develop, right? And its return on investment was like 35% or something like that, right? Meanwhile, I forgot what other company, it was probably Nintendo, released whatever game it was, and it was like 122% return on investment, you know? With not even spending close to that amount of money. So it's like, yes, those big tentpole games, you know, drive people to buy these systems, but at the same time, how can you sustain that? It's like you're literally having studios releasing a game a generation. Rockstar, Naughty Dog.
And then Mr. Ryan's infinite knowledge, right? He literally closed down two of the studios that made AAA games for Sony themselves. Japan Studio and the London.
Yeah. It's crazy, man.
You could have filled those holes with smaller games, but instead, and now you what was it? 12 service games that are in limbo currently.
Yeah.
What was that all about?
Yeah. Again, they're just throwing literally throwing shit at a wall to see what sticks, because they only need one hit. They just need one Helldivers. And that's the other thing. Helldivers, that was the game. They got a lot of return on investment because they weren't even thinking it was going to be a hit, you know?
Yeah. They got a lot of return off of Helldivers, and that game was a $40 game.
Yep. They ain't that something.
See about prices. You see about all this stuff, man.
Yeah, go ahead. Come on.
Oh, they've had this idea. A lot of people have had this idea recently too. That, you know, everybody's chasing the Fortnite, right? They get it. The one big prize is worth all of their effort. When honestly, like you said, like the return on investment, because it's so much more investment, isn't really a great thing. So everybody's just been beefing up. But the problem is, you can't put 9 pregnant women in a room and make a baby in a month. Like, that's not how it works. You can't just keep adding people and hoping that one of them is talented and somehow not drowned out by the mediocrity around them. Is why we've been getting games by committee, right? Like, we have not been getting anything innovative in the AAA space because honestly, the games industry has a problem identifying key talent. I think nepotism or bureaucracy or whatever is getting in the way, because you see a lot more innovation smaller. And it should be that they're able to identify this within their own structure, but that just doesn't honestly seem to be the case, and maybe just a symptom of corporate workplace, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I feel like, and I've talked about this previously, I feel like the biggest issue with the industry is that there aren't many, there's not much of a sort of a hierarchy when it comes to making games. Like Kojima Productions, you have a singular sort of vision focus, and that's Kojima's vision, and he sets the table for everything. But when you look at games like a Halo Infinite or you know, some other games, some other AAA games like Assassin's Creed, it doesn't feel like there's one person that's sort of setting that tone for the game. It feels like they're made out of a committee, and they're made to generate as much money as possible. And that doesn't really take that much of a vision or that much creativity or that much innovation to do. It's more of let's see what Fortnite did and add these wacky dances and do life service and loot boxes. And I feel like that's, you know, chasing that carrot is the issue with the industry. And yeah, I mean, when you have people like Kojima, there's not that many of them, but if you're not going to harbor them, then you'll never get them. So you'll have some failures in the way, but you know, when you hit, you hit.
Yeah. We got to talk about EA now. They're the other big one this week. EA to lay off 670 workers, sunsetting games, moving away from future licensed IP, and a Star Wars game that's in development is gone now, son. You know?
Not a Star Wars game.
Yeah, we don't have enough of those.
It was bound to be so good.
How many have they canceled now in the last few years?
Yeah, it was like supposed to be the FPS one, but let me read this first from IGN. EA has announced that it, too, is undergoing mass layoffs with plans to let go of 5% of its total global staff, or roughly 670 individuals. In a note today sent to staff, CEO Andrew Wilson said that EA is reacting to accelerating industry transformation where player needs and motivations and change significantly. Crucially, EA...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I didn't understand what the fuck I just read.
No, that's them basically saying we had no idea what people want and they voted with their wallets and now we're trying to change as quickly as possible. Yeah. Like, that is them. That is the most corporatist bullshit, I'm sorry, I think I've ever fucking... We're adapting to what... Say that shit again?
Yeah, I was going to say, let me read this again. Slowly, because I'm like, I didn't know what the fuck I just read.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are reacting to it. Here's a quote: accelerating industry transformation where player needs and motivations and change significantly.
Oh my god. it's all a bunch of professional jargon. It doesn't mean anything.
It literally just words strung together, but they don't make sense.
Yeah.
It just like rolls off my smooth brain. Like, they do that on purpose. Like,
anyway,
wait.
Yeah, go ahead.
Are they really accelerating changes in customer needs? Like, have customer needs really been changing, or have they just been not identifying them?
I think it's that they haven't been identified. Remember, EA, remember the whole fiasco with Battlefield, you know? Yeah, we're gonna just do whatever the hell we want with World War II, you know?
That's just what I'm saying. Like, EA coming out here like, you changed. What? Fuck you. Yeah. Have not.
I remember literally when it was Battlefield 5, wasn't it, Chris? They literally said, like, oh, if you don't like what we've done with the game, don't buy it. Players were like, okay, you won't.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what happens. You tell people not to buy your shit. They just won't buy it. Kelly sued Iconic, you know? It's fucking insane, man. Anyway, EA said that it is, quote, moving away from the development of future licensed IPs. You mean like Star Wars?
Yeah, right.
You know?
Well, yeah, well.
And
well,
Marvel.
The proof is in the pudding, and we saw this from that, from the leak, right? How much money Marvel and Disney are taking for that license.
Yeah.
To specifically license Spider-Man. So, I'm thinking that's the reasoning. They want to focus on their own titles because they don't need to pay a shitload of money to make them.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they do. They just don't need to pay someone else for the license. They don't need to. Remember Anthem? that just cost a shitload of money.
Well, it cost a shitload of money, but they didn't need to pay another studio.
Right. It's their IP. Fee. So I get that, but. See, they have to do such a huge course correction because they're doing so poorly that people at the bottom suffer, and then they have to do these drastic steps. Oh, we can't do licensed games anymore, or for the foreseeable future, if they even have a future. I don't know. Like this whole statement from him, and I did the same thing, Tony. I read it like three times. I was like, what the hell is he saying? Like, I usually can read between the lines of bullshit. I'm okay at it, but this was like total bullshit. I was like, you're not saying anything in half of this statement.
This was expert level bullshittery.
Yeah, I'm like, the jargon level in here is like off the scale.
Yeah, like each word made less sense than the last, you know?
Yeah.
I want to read some stuff here. Mr. Shinobi posted some tidbits here. Respawn's unannounced Star Wars FPS has been canceled. Ridgeline Games, working on a single-player Battlefield experience, is being shut down. Development on the next Mass Effect continues, with BioWare's focus currently on Dragon Age. We'll see how those turn out, you know?
What?
We'll see, man.
We shall see.
After Andromeda and the current state of EA, I don't trust these fucking people, man.
Yeah, is it a mainline game or?
Yeah, the mainline game. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be Mass Effect 4.
No, the other one.
Oh, Dragon Age.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, Dragon's Age, you may have called it.
Oh! Never heard of it.
But yeah, I don't know about that. And again, like we always said, if that those games don't hit and EA just keeps bleeding money, you know, I mean, BioWare keeps bleeding money, you know, EA's going to be like, gone, bye, BioWare. You know, Microsoft should have bought them. Just saying, you know. Yeah, and then the Star Wars FPS game, that's just gone now, you know. I barely remember that even being announced, you know. Does anybody remember that shit?
Yeah, I just want to make a quick comment.
Yeah, go ahead.
The game wasn't announced. This was supposed to be a Mandalorian first-person shooter.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I know a lot of people was excited because they did announce a Mandalorian movie is coming out. So they definitely going to lose a lot of money behind canceling that project.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, the licensed games that they were developing, they were going to be doing a third Jedi Survivor game, a Black Panther game, mm-hmm. and Iron Man. We don't know what's going to happen with these games now. You know,
I mean, here's the thing. Here's the problem with those things. Because you're paying so much in licensing fee, like, they have to hit at least a little bit. Like, you can't take the risks on them. And there's no surefire game now. There's no surefire, you know, they thought they had it, but now they're, you know, there's no surefire formula. There we go. Formula to get down. It used to be Assassin's Creed. Now that's not working. They're kind of panicking.
Yeah, well, that's Ubisoft, you know.
I think it's everybody.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, if you look at, like, what are the games that have really nailed, like, hit and really excited the fan base lately? It's shit like Powerworld and Baldur's Gate and Elden Ring. Like, what the fuck is Ubisoft supposed to do with that? What's EA supposed to do with that? Like, that bring back Dragon's Dogma and
that's Capcom.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, the industry as a whole, like, there's a bunch of kind of different small key AA experiences coming up, but there's not a fine line to draw between them to make one homogenized game. So, like, these super games, like, what do you do now? Like, if you take everything that's on the market, put it in a pot and boil it up and come up with the Assassin's Creed and that doesn't work, then what's the recipe?
Yeah. That's something I read an article. I think it was actually, I think it was from The Verge, I believe. But yeah, they were just talking about how that's the problem. It's like we have too many of these big AAA games. Basically, AAA games that have to have every single thing in them, Applebee's of gaming, like as Chris has said, right? So where companies would be better off releasing smaller games that are tight and focused, you know. And I'm going to bring up Final Fantasy Rebirth because, you know, it's out now. That's actually they cited that game and they were 100% right. The game is fantastic, but there is also a lot to fluff in there too, because big games need to have that now, or they feel like it. But here's the thing. Let me stop myself. Because fans will call that shit out. It annoys me. Like, oh, there's not enough content in this game. So it's like, you guys are asking for this bloated shit, you know? And that's why we have what we have now, you know? It's very upsetting, man. It's like, yeah, why can't we just have focused games? We don't need every game to be 50 million thousand fucking hours, you know? A nice, you know, back we used to have 10-hour game, we're good and we're happy, you know. Or if you want a bigger game, 40-hour RPG, we could have that. Not everything needs to have, like, literally the kitchen sink and all this other stuff, you know. And I guess now maybe the industry's going to be forced to do that, you know. And again, I hate to give them credit, but I'll give Nintendo props. Their games are fucking focused. You know, it's like, here's the experience this game's going to give you. Here's the experience this game this going to give you. Most of the other developers are like, this game has everything, you know? So that's just not sustainable. And I'm saying this as a guy who loves him some motherfucking AAA games. This shit is not sustainable, you know?
The thing about it is, it's like, you can't take when the expectation is the sky's the limit. people always expect that. And the moment that we start to go backwards, that's when the other backlash starts to happen. Oh, this game is not worth this amount of money. Oh, this thing is da, da, da. It becomes that sort of a conversation. So it's like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. The expectations are so high and they can't be quantified right now. So now it's like, okay, now we got to put everything, including the kitchen sink, and you know, in there, because that's the expectation.
Yeah, but again, even gamers say, "Oh, so only 40 hours? I'm not getting hurt."
Yeah, only 40 hours. Yeah. But yet every single game company knows how many hours players are playing, and if you ever look at any of that metadata,
25% of people beat games, man. So it's like the same people asking, yeah, "I want my game to be 200 hours long." You're not playing that shit for 200 hours, you know?
Yeah. So it's like, are you creating this space so that people just don't complain about the reality of the game?
Yeah.
It's a weird one, because it's like, again, like, if you were talking about 25% of people so finish games, wouldn't that mean you want to make games a little bit smaller?
Yeah. By the way, shout out to Otaku Man, who's in the chat. He goes, "If it's only 20 hours, it is too short for these quote unquote gamers." Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I'm not buying that. Yeah. Wait, that game's $40? That must be low budget piece of shit. That we've heard that many, yeah, many times, you know.
But I want to say,
but Helldivers did well at $40, didn't it? You know?
But again, like, I want to bring up the actual PlayStation numbers compared to the PC numbers.
Yes, because I bet you. Yeah, yeah. It's the PC guys. PC guys aren't stupid like that. They'll be like, "Oh, okay, $40, cool. This game was fun." You know, meanwhile, console gamers like, you know, Grey Poupon motherfuckers, you know, $40. I scoff.
$40, you know, for this? What is this?
Meanwhile, PC gamers like, $40 to fucking go, you know?
Yeah, like, here's the thing, like, even with all the problems that, you know, them underestimating their player count, it's a $40 game.
Yeah.
What did you expect?
And it's fun. That's the other thing.
There's a lot of games on PC that launch at like 40 or less. Yeah. And they end up doing a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. It's upsetting, man. I guess we're going to see even more layoffs throughout the course of the year, you know?
I don't know, man. And then, like, yeah, now we're here, and, you know, again, maybe that little bit on the business call that Sony did the other time was, maybe that was the prelude to all of this. They're like, yeah, there's not going to be any major releases this year, maybe because they knew who they were cutting.
Yeah. But it says, sadly, Sony has conditioned their players to expect these high budget and huge games. It's not just Sony, though. It's the industry as a whole.
It's the industry, you know, in general. Like, every single one of these companies is all suffering for essentially the same sort of
suffer
thing.
Suffer for your sins.
Yeah, so.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's this loop, you know? It's like, okay, we got to invest. Okay, you know, gamers want these big-ass games. We got to throw more and more in there. Oh, we're spending so much money. We got to throw more in there to get more people in. And it just keeps going and going and going and going. And then we just have giant messes, you know?
Yeah. And then again, like, lower budgeted games. And this goes back to what Brett was talking about. Lower budgeted games allows for innovation, because they didn't make a huge investment in the game. It allows, as long as the guys got as long as the studio got the thing done in time, then they can continue to push forward. And that's where I feel like is the magic point. You have your big cornerstone games. You have your Last of Us's and your other ones like that. Those are like your big features. These are like, you know, the smaller games. This is like, hey, this is like your RoboCops. Movies that didn't cost that, they you know, that do what they do, but it didn't cost a crazy amount of money to make.
Yeah.
Your Terminators, you know. Terminator didn't cost nearly as much as it. And once it has established itself, then the studio said, okay, we're going to invest a little bit more money. They need to start more franchises with that space. And that's the heyday of the PlayStation 2 era. That's a portion of the PlayStation 3 era. You know, that's also partially what Xbox was, you know, initially too, when they made their legitimate investment in actual games, you know, pushing RPGs and our platformers and all kinds of other things. These games weren't like super expensive AAA, you know, experiences.
Yeah. It's funny, the original Final Fantasy was actually the most expensive game of its time, you know, but that was a very rare thing.
And to be honest, they didn't know if that game was going to do well. They just figured, okay, if we're going to go out, with a bang on this one and see if that's why it's the Final Fantasy, you know?
Well, Final Fantasy, you know, seven, I'm talking about, you know, the one on PlayStation, you know?
The one on PlayStation?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. With seven, at the time, it was the most expensive game ever made.
Yeah. Well, you know? It was the most expensive game at the time. But I think the thing about it is because you also got to factor in. I'm sure Sony, once they saw what was going into this thing and saw all the cinematics and all that stuff, they probably pumped some additional money into that game.
But basically, my point is that was rare. Now that's all you get with the big publishers, you know. But again, the problem is you can only get one or two of those a year, you know. They call it because it takes
the one. By the way,
remember how we said the average for a big game is like 4 years? It's actually now it's 5 years. It's getting longer.
It's like 5 years.
You know, it's getting longer.
It's five.
You know?
It's got 5 and 6 years. That's like that's almost most of a generation, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah,
so that I mean, mean yeah, it's that would mean
big majority of a generation. Yeah.
Yeah. So that would mean that whatever's probably coming up in the future, right? Those companies have to be working on something now in order to hit that launch date.
Yeah. By the way, Rich, our boy Reggie, he's in the chat. He wants to know what your take on this is, you know, these ballooning, AAA, budgets.
Well, like you guys said, Sean Layton was right all those years ago. I don't understand what's, you know, I don't really know who is making these decisions. I assume the higher up execs are making these decisions to take these big bets with whatever games they're publishing. But they really should think about, you know, look at what's happening in the industry, because there's been plenty of independent games or smaller games that have been wildly successful. And we've already spoken about Helldivers 2. Previously, that game is a success. And there were other games over the years that were a success as well. So I think a lot of companies need to take a look at that, maybe invest in doing some smaller projects to see what's successful instead of throwing all this money at the big, big budget titles. Obviously, there's always going to be some big AAA titles. But I think as a whole, the industry needs to take a step back and just try to experiment with different projects.
Well, I don't think it's just the industry. I think we as the fan base need to kind of temper our expectations too. I mean, I even know, like, on this panel, Tony and I have had conversations about, like, what makes a game successful. And, like, it can't be 15 million copies anymore. It just can't. That's unsustainable for a game to be considered successful. You know what I mean? And, like, it's not that we're wrong. It's just that it cannot, that, like, that equation cannot happen.
Yeah, not anymore, you know? Okay. Not anymore, but again, what else do you judge a game's success by if not sales? I can't compute that.
Well, it's not even that. It's like you can judge a success, but like not everything's going to be a blockbuster. Not everything's going to be like an uber success, right? Like take like Remnant, right? Like Remnant was a great game. It seems to have a cult following. It sold over 2 million units. It cost like
I call that successful for sure.
Mm-hmm. I would too, but it's not 15 million.
Yeah. maybe it just needs to be like, not 15 million. Like maybe you need to adjust how much, like the expectation of how much money you expect to bring in. Maybe that needs to be adjusted, not copies per se, because obviously if the game sells 100 copies, that's not successful in any stretch of the imagination, you know?
No. And if we're talking about like success in a purely business sense, it would be return on investment.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I see like what you're saying, though. That's so hard. That's so hard to compute by.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Apollo Neon says success is a game makes enough money to keep paying the developers to make the next game. Yeah, pretty much. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, like you said, Remnant, the first game probably didn't make a bazillion dollars, but it made enough to do a sequel, you know? So, yeah.
The sequel did better than the first one, made more money. So,
there you go, man. So, yeah, something's definitely have to change in the industry. And again, I'm saying this as a person who loves some of the AAA games. The shit is unsustainable. You just can't do it.
I mean,
you know?
I can say as somebody who's like, I've honestly, like, did not see this happening. Never thought I'd be that guy. We all watched it slowly happening. I realized the other day, like, I've just kind of left the AAA landscape almost entirely. Like, I didn't play Spider-Man 2, didn't play Final Fantasy. Like, I just have no desire to. Like, these high-polished, multi-million-dollar AAA, put-you-on-rails, like, shove everything in your face. Like, I just, they're not doing it for me anymore. And I suddenly find myself, like, apparently I'm now the AA guy. Not really so much indies, because I was never, like, huge into indies, but, like, I'm finding myself fans of those slightly smaller space games.
Well, I mean, you've in the last year, you've been kind of championing the idea of embrace not mediocre games, but mid-level games. You used a better word than I did. My word is
no. I said embrace mediocrity.
Okay. So I wasn't wrong then. So yeah, you've embraced that saying. You know.
But welcome to the club, Brett. It's nice to have you here.
Thanks, Brian. Enjoy I like day. It here.
It's nice when there's not high expectations. It's just like, is the game going to be fun to play for a while? Yes, then that's all it needs to be, you know.
It's true. And like, I could go off on another tirade about like expectations and things like that. But honestly, I think the best thing is I haven't talked to Tony about this yet. But like, so I don't know how you guys heard. Like, I got a new girlfriend, and she's recently decided to jump into the current console gen. And let her do her own information. I actually stepped back and I kind of like answered any questions she had, but like stepped back and just wanted to see her make her own decision. And she, along with another friend of mine, actually both bought Xboxes. And it's been kind of a revelatory experience watching her interact, having not like played much since the PlayStation 4, like has not been a part of this generation at all. So to see her kind of interact with it and to see her like messing around with Game Pass and finding the games on Game Pass and seeing how it's changed her approach to video games from an outside point of view, I think it's been really interesting. And I'd actually be really interested in bringing her on here if anybody would be interested in hearing from that. But but that being said, like, I think it's Brian, it's that's why things like Steam sales and Game Pass, things like that, I think really, really do help shape the community and the fandom around these things, because it does. It changes the bar to entry, which changes the expectations, which it when you change the context, it's just different. You know, it's nice to just have fun again.
Yeah. All right. I guess have any more thoughts on this latest bloodbath?
When's it gonna stop?
I don't know, man.
I mean, if we're in a situation where Sony has to cut staff, and by the sounds of it, it was from every studio had something. I even heard that Insomniac had some cuts.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, wait, the same Insomniac that's propping up the PS5 has cuts? Like, how and why? Does that make sense? You know, like, I can understand, like, Halo getting cuts, right? Okay, fine. You know, they didn't make a great game. Makes sense, you know? But Insomniac? It's like, they are the only company what's the one? The release title, launch title. The one with the woman in it and the time travel and the bullet hell.
House Marquee.
Yes, Returnal. Yeah. House Marquee. Apart from the House Marquee, they are like the only studio that's made PS5 games. I think
Returnal was in a launch game, was it? I don't think it was. It was close, but not.
Come on. It was definitely on that list from people trying to pad that shit.
But again, I'm taking that statement literally. Launch game means game that came out at launch. You know,
yeah.
Well,
I know I'm being kind of pedantic there, but
launch window game.
Yes, there you go. Launch window, within the first 12 months of the game's release.
Oh, wow. Is that how long the launch window is? Shit, for me, launch window is 3 months. You know, I'm like, 3 months is the fucking launch window. And even that's me being generous, you know? Anyway, Brian, I just wanted to clear it up because I was like, okay. That was going to bug me, though. I was not going to listen to anything else you said. I'm like, wait a minute. anyway, continue, sir.
The point is, it's okay. There's only Insomniac. Wait, there's mostly Insomniac making PS5 games at this point in time.
MVP
studios now are not making PS5 games for some odd reason. So hence, the shock was, why is the studio that's making maybe 1/3, 40% of PS5 games at the moment, the one that's cut? It's just, how does that make sense? You know, it's like, it's practically the winning team at the moment, and yet that has cuts. So it seems like no one is safe, no matter who you are, where you are. So I don't know, it's going to be just an odd place to be. And this is where I kind of, it's kind of weird now. This is where I kind of look at Nintendo and say, hey, Nintendo seems to be doing the right thing. Like, when they have issues, they just take pay cuts. Whereas other places have issues, they take a staff cut. You know, it's fucked up, but that's what's happening, and it just really bugs me. Like, that's not how things should be. It should be everyone, again, if everyone's in it in the success, everyone should be in it when it fails. And it just seems like most industries, well, most companies are not doing that. Or Nintendo, which again is weird giving Nintendo praise, but hey, you know, like, call me when Nintendo lays off some studios, I guess.
We don't really hear about that, do we?
I honestly don't remember hearing it.
Yeah.
Unless Chris knows something that I don't, since...
Gotta give the devil his due. We don't really hear these stories about Nintendo companies, you know? As much as it pains me to give Nintendo props again, you gotta give them props. All the storm is going on. Their whole Blue Ocean shit is like, okay, you guys are over there on the mainland doing some crazy shit. We're over here, you know? You want to join us, it's cool, but, you know, we're not going to follow your lead. Very interesting. Nintendo has 98% staff retention. God damn. That's crazy.
They loyal.
Yeah, right, you know. Anyway, let's continue. Actually, perfect segue.
Wait, does that make Chris like the renegade?
Yes.
Oh, the one that got away.
Yeah, I'm the 2%er, right?
Yeah, you are. but anyway, Brian, you gave me the perfect segue because we have to talk about Nintendo now. Nintendo is suing the makers of open source Switch emulator Yuzu. Oh boy. Nintendo, man, they don't fuck around. You know, they definitely epitomize the whole fuck around, find out ethos, you know? Let me read this from Polygon. Nintendo is suing the makers of Yuzu, an open source Nintendo Switch emulator, according to a lawsuit filed in Rhode Island court on Monday. GameFile reporter Steven Totilo first reported the suit. The 41-page lawsuit was filed against Tropic Haze, the company that makes Yuzu. Nintendo also specifically references a person alias as Bune, who leads development on Yuzu. Yuzu is a free emulator that was released in 2018, months after the Nintendo Switch originally launched. The same folks who made Citra, a Nintendo 3DS emulator, made this one. Basically, it's a piece of software that lets people play Nintendo Switch games on Windows PC, Linux, and Android devices. It also runs on Steam Deck, which Valve showed, then wiped in a Steam Deck video clip. Oh, shit, I remember that. Emulators aren't necessarily illegal, but pirating games to play them on there is. Anyway, so yeah, Nintendo's going after the other one. Brett, what's up, man? You got something to say, bro?
I'm talking to my kitty. Don't mind me.
Okay, shout out to Brett's cat, you know? Anyway, Chris, what's your thoughts on this, man?
Podcast. Well, I've talked about this in the history of Nintendo before. This sounds like the Galoob lawsuit.
Yeah.
You know, where they're like, their main complaint is like, oh, this is breaking our security on the system. But it's pretty flimsy because all users can say is like, we don't distribute any games. We don't advocate piracy. All we're doing is allowing people to play their copy of games or their backups on whatever they want, right? And we're not responsible to do. So it's going to come down to, even if Nintendo says, oh, these are the damages from people bootlegging Tears of the Kingdom, that's not users' responsibility, because how are people getting Tears of the Kingdom? User didn't pirate the game. They didn't break in. They didn't leak it. That's, you know, other people make hardware so you could, you know, back up the Switch cartridges. You know, people make all sorts of stuff. This lawsuit, it's they just want to shut down the method to play Switch games anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And I really hope it doesn't work, because this, it's not their responsibility. It's not users' responsibility to, police ROM sites or anyone else. That's Nintendo's responsibility. If you want to take that on, and their legal team always does that. They went after ROM Universe. They went after that guy. That Bowser dude, right? He went to prison. So they're really litigious, and it's kind of awful. And here's the thing. This is not going to work out the way they want, because if you take away Yuzu, and Yuzu has a ton of supporters. They're in the article, it mentions how many Patreons they have and stuff. You take that away, five more Yuzus will pop up after that. There will be guys taking that code. It's open source. You can just go on GitHub and get it. They will take that and go make their own. And they will make a ton. And they'll make ROM, ISO, mirrors, and all this shit. Like, you will open up a can of worms. Just like with Game Genie, you will just open up a whole world of hurts. This is a stupid move. This attacking these guys is not going to change the fact that people are bootlegging Switch games, that there are ROM sites and ROM piracy happening. You're not going to change that with this. All you're going to do is cause more of these guys are going to take whatever Yuzu has, now that this is public, and go make their own. And you'll have five more. And you can't stop them all. They'll just keep happening.
You can. They'll probably even, in a sense, now since it's out in the field, you know, it could be like a Napster situation of like, oh shit, there's something that does that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And well, also, yeah. I also feel like this is not only is this thing to essentially stop them from further development, but I also think I think whether they win or lose, Yuzu is done. That whoever's making that thing, you know what I mean? I think they want to catch them in all of the litigation and all the legal fees, and just knock them out that way.
Well, they could, unless they grassroots fund, get their legal fees funded. They seem to have a ton of people supporting them. So if they go, hey, we need help with our legal fees, a lot of grassroots support could go, like, you know, they could do a give, send, go or whatever and start getting money for their legal problems. See, so and if they grassroots that and enough people pay for their legal fees, then it's just going to be fought out in the court. And Nintendo's going to have a really hard time proving that laying at their feet the damages that they perceive that they lost from sales of like Tears of the Kingdom, that's the main title they're putting out there. How do you lay it at their feet? They're going to be like, did they pirate the game? Did they jack the game? Did they break in your servers and steal it? How exactly does that work? How do you prove that? And this is an uphill battle for Nintendo. I think they should lose this case, because you'll just make the situation worse. They don't see that. Instead of going to Yuzu and trying to work something out, Or I don't know, maybe because they're always heavy-handed with the legal stuff, maybe they did the cease and desist and all this stuff, and these guys are like, no, we're not pirating anything, so we're not going to stop. And so now they take them to court. It should have been like, hey, what you've done here is pretty good. Maybe try to acquire them and then quietly squash it, whatever. But this is how Nintendo does things. They just lean on the lawyers and go full bore, and that's a terrible idea. Either they lose this case, or you will create it's a hydra. You will just create more users. You'll create guys, and people will launch ROM sites indiscriminately to just fuck with them. So they should not do this, but they're going to do it. So, and I hope they lose this case.
Yeah, I want to read some of the comments here, because some interesting stuff. I got to go back a little bit. Kishak says, I've seen Richard Hoag. He's a YouTube lawyer. I've seen Richard Hoag say he's a good guy too, by the way. Also, actually, before I go on, real quick, before I forget, happy birthday to Mr. Otaku Man. I just saw that now, so happy birthday!
Oh yeah, happy birthday, man!
All right, real quick. Okay, so Kisha goes, I've seen Richard Hoag say that Nintendo has a good shot to win this lawsuit, and then Blitz says, plus, Yuzu Discord had Nintendo lawyers lurking and caught them telling people how to pirate games. Oh, shit.
Okay, what? Well, all right, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's crazy. Blitzo says, they are not going after emulators. They are going after these guys for being idiots. And then Kishak goes, from people reading the lawsuit, Nintendo is actively trying to set precedent to make emulation in general legal. Yeah, because this is something they've been doing. They didn't even want fucking video game rentals back in the day.
Yeah, you know? they stood Blockbuster trying to stop video game rentals.
Blitz says they, I guess Nintendo, they have proof of them telling people how to pirate in their Discord. Nintendo lawyers were lurking and got them. That's crazy. Yeah.
No, but here's the thing. Even if you tell people like, hey, ROM sites exist, here's where you can go get stuff. they are not, again, the argument is, are they supplying the actual games to people? And the answer is no. So I disagree that they do, they have a good case on this. Even if they say, hey, in the Discord, they told people how to get, how to, where to go to find games. And it's like, so what? It's like, I could tell you where to go to get porno. Is that illegal? It's like, well, you know, it's like, am I, you know, subverting stuff? No, it's like, you, these sites exist. If they, you know, they could go, oh, well, they could have been smarter about it, been like, hey, just Google it. You'll find ROM sites all over the place, you know, and just stay away from it. But they didn't. But it, at the end of the day, it's like, did they, in all those conversations, did they have evidence that they said, hey, here's a link to Tears of the Kingdom. Go download it and have fun, you know? If they did that, that's pretty stupid. Yeah, I agree. And I didn't know all that. But if they just said, hey, there's sites like this, like ROM whatever, and here you go. Here's ROM sites. Go, you know, do what you want. I know. I wash my hands of it, but that's where you get stuff. And yeah. That's still tough to prove because, linking people, it's like opening the door for someone. If you walk inside, that's still your decision.
Yeah. Blitz says they also have proof they were tracking how many copies of Tears were being played prior to launch and were touting it. Nintendo got data from Yuzu Tracker, LOL.
Yeah, oh, but shit. So what does that mean? Yeah. If they have metrics how many people are playing Tears of the Kingdom, they don't know how many people, how many of those people, how do you get metrics, how many of those people purchased the game versus bootlegged it? And you can say, well, it's obvious they bootlegged it. Sure, how did they get the backup? But what if some of them actually did buy it and then just say, hey, I don't want to play it like this. I want to play it on the Steam Deck. You don't know. You don't have that metric. So just saying you have metrics, they probably have metrics for every single game people emulate on there.
Yeah, he says prior to launch. Yeah. By the way, is this true in general? Nintendo doesn't issue lawsuits they can't win. Have they won every lawsuit? I don't think they have.
No, they lost the Blockbuster lawsuit.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they lost that one big time. They lost that one.
Yeah.
You know.
Not only that, yeah. They actually petitioned. There was a Texas senator. I remember when I talked about this back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And he put forward a bill to try to stop video game rentals. That's how they tried to get around it when they lost the case, was they tried to get a bill introduced. They sponsored a bill to end video game rentals.
That's crazy.
So that's how much they wanted that shit ended back in the day. So they've taken out plenty of cases they've lost. They've won a lot too. Like they've sued Nyko for IP infringement and all this stuff. And Galoob, they... I believe they won against, well, I don't know if they won the Galoob stuff, but I think they bankrupted them. I think that's why Galoob didn't exist after that. I don't think they won that case either. But they've won other cases. Of course, they got that Bowser guy put in jail for his Switch hack. So, you know, there you go.
Real quick, I want to read this part. Nintendo argued that Yuzu executes codes that, quote, defeat Nintendo's security measures, including decryption using an, quote, illegally obtained copy of prod.keys. So here's another one. In other words, without Yuzu's decryption of Nintendo's encryption, unauthorized copies of games cannot be played on PCs or Android devices. That's what Nintendo says. So, yeah, very interesting stuff. We'll see how this goes. All right, next up here. This one's crazy. Epic Games allegedly was hacked. Nearly 200 gigabytes of data was stolen, reportedly. All right, here we go. It's an update. This is from WCF Tech. In a statement provided to Eurogamer, Epic Games confirmed an investigation is underway, but there is currently zero evidence that the claims from ransomware group Magi Levich are real. The group also failed to provide evidence to Epic Games when asked. I'm guessing this group claimed that they hacked them, but we don't know if that's true or not. Kind of interesting. Let me read this. This is original report. As reported today by Cyber Daily, ransomware gang Magi Levich, a relative newcomer to the scene, claimed to have attacked Epic Games' service and have stolen 189 gigabytes of data, which includes email, passwords, full names, payment information, source code, and more. The stolen data is also up for sale, although no price has been mentioned, and the deadline is set to March 4th. That's Monday, I believe. As the ransomware group hasn't provided any proof of their claims, it is hard to say if they managed to steal anything from Epic Games. The company has yet to release, well, they released an official statement now. So, yeah, they're investigating it. Yo, what's up with these hacks, man? Like, you know, you have these big companies. You figure they'd have, like, a bomb-ass security. But, you know, I guess where there's a will, there's a way, huh? You know, Brian, what's your take on this, man?
Hey there. Interesting stuff, if true. But, again, without proof that they did it, it's hard to tell. And, yeah, I think just case of wait and see. Again, it's all the usual stuff of username, passwords. Again, the main question is, were the passwords encrypted? Because if not, then it's going to be another question of why aren't basic OPSEC stuff being used here? Because passwords should always be encrypted if they're stored.
Yeah, so yeah, we'll keep an eye on this one, but pretty interesting stuff. All right, moving on here. This one's interesting. So apparently, Rockstar Games is band-aiding. Everybody go back to the office. We're done with this work from home stuff, you know, and they're kind of citing that there's been too many leaks happening, you know, during the whole work from home thing. And since they're ramping up development on GTA 6, they want to just clamp shit down. So like, okay, everybody's working from the office now. Chris, you used to work for Rockstar Games, so I want to hear your take on this.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, it's tough to keep things secure because you don't know when assets are moving around and they're in at somebody's house and who could have access to their laptop or whatever, and where they're working from. Like, they don't necessarily have to work from home. They could sit in a coffee shop. But if you have a GTA 6 map open and you have your computer open and you walk away from it or whatever and somebody could get in there, or you're on an unsecured connection and they can just intercept what you're doing, or you end up like just leaving a flash drive or something somewhere. There's many ways like things can go wrong. They're trying to end that. And yeah, they have a good point with the leaks and stuff. So the only way to control that, because you cannot stop everyone. You can't just build good network habits with everyone. Even if you institute VPNs and encryption and all this stuff, there's always going to be an issue somewhere. Somebody's going to lose a laptop. Somebody's going to lose a flash drive or a portable hard drive. So you need to do these things. And yeah, they were, when I was there, they were pretty buttoned up. Like, you weren't allowed to work remotely back then. So that wasn't even an issue.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes sense. Like, they have to do that.
So
also,
yeah, go ahead.
Also, it's the final stretch apparently of GTA 6. So
yeah,
you know, when you get to that final stretch, it's hard to crunch if you can't see them crunching.
Oh shit. Yeah. And what's interesting is that apparently some, you know, developers working on GTA 6 who are remaining anonymous are not happy with this decision. You know, one of them said, working from home has been a lifeline for many of us at Rockstar, allowing us to balance care responsibilities, manage disabilities, and relocate as we need. Now Rockstar is snatching away that lifeline without a second thought for the workers who will be impacted most. After so many broken promises, we now fear management may even be paving the way for a return to toxic crunch practices. Carlos, just you mentioned that. Senior leadership need to rethink the reckless decision making and engage with the staff to find an arrangement that works for everybody. So yeah, some developers are like, you know, by the way, this is interesting. Apparently there's a gaming union over in the UK. That's the thing. Basically they're called the Independent Workers Unit of Great Britain, which represents video game developers in the UK. America doesn't have anything like that.
No.
Wow.
Here you just no. You open your mouth like that. Like, you better rethink this. You rethink where you're working.
Yeah.
Somebody over there actually managed to squeeze that one through.
Yeah, well, it's not just that one guy. It's a bunch of people.
It's a bunch of guys.
I'm saying somebody over there essentially approved it. Like, Like, most of the time when it comes to these unions, they will not accept a union. Like, a studio will not accept a union. So, again, like, somebody over there was like, somebody managed to get that one through, or there was some sort of law over there that talked about it. But yeah, like, I don't know of any video game unions, even though, you know, what's his face? What the hell's that guy's name? Tim Schafer was talking about unions years ago, but I don't remember anything coming from it.
No, there's no video game union in America. Yeah.
And the thing is, like, so, you know, I worked in the New York office. No games are developed in New York, right? They're only developed in Rockstar North, which is, you know, in the UK, San Diego, that's the studio that usually does Red Dead. And there's a third one, I forget where it is. And then there's the kind of audio video stuff is done in Long Island. So, you know, so it's different. Like, if this was like the San Diego studio, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't be saying anything about it. They would just be reporting to work, right? Because we don't have a video game union. You don't have a developers union.
Yeah, there's all the UK guys saying this stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, Leeds, Chris says Otaku Man. That was the other one.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. And Otaku Man, I don't know if you were here earlier when we wish you a happy birthday, but happy birthday. You are awesome. Here's another quote, kind of goes with the whole crunch thing. As usual, there has been zero consultation with us. The people who these policy changes most affect, just one of my concerns is being forced to work late hours in the office to maintain contact with global teams when before we could log on from home to attend late meetings. This will mean missing out on spending time with our families. I am also aware of colleagues who have health issues preventing full-time office work who are now left in limbo. I think that's what it's like. Okay, crunch time, motherfuckers. You're all in the office now, you know?
Yep.
Some crazy shit, man. So we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, you're right, Chris. Like, in America, it's like, nope. Get your asses back in the office and that's it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Google, you make a Google comment like that here. That's your resignation.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yep. I mean, these guys they're still being anonymous, though, you know?
Oh, yeah. They're scared because, you know, you always worry about retaliation afterwards. Yeah. It's like your job could be protected, but your ass could be moved around, you know?
Yeah, right. Get a window seat or something.
Right.
Never know, man. Crazy shit.
More like the middle seat.
The middle, excuse me? You know? But okay, so since they're ramping up, you know, development with GTA 6, just to throw out there, like, yeah, so I guess you think they might hit their 2025, you know, date, I guess.
Oh, right? Do I think so?
Yeah, do you think so, Chris? Like, you think the game actually realistically come out in 2025?
Probably late 2025. I mean, it's a look at GTA 4, look at the shit show that was. And I remember I was there when it was initially supposed to launch, then the hell that broke out when we announced the delay. And the kind of in my team, it was like all hands on deck handling the forums and all the freaking outrage. Related to September. Yeah. I remember that. So I don't know, because they just gave 2025. They didn't give it a month or a quarter, you know, or a season. This is just 2025. So it could be any time in there. So hopefully they just set the expectation by holiday. Maybe if they go late 2025 or whatever, give themselves some breathing room that, you know. But don't say like spring and then do the same thing. It's like, oh, well, we're not going to make spring. Maybe holiday 2025.
Yeah, I think they should just – place every just sleep 2025 and that's just that.
yeah
release that shit in freaking December 26 or something. Oh man, all right, there's that. And last story of the night, let's end with some good news, man. Baldur's Gate 3 has sold 10 million copies. I would call that a success. That's a lot of copies. That is worldwide across all platforms, according to Larry. So, Brad, what's your take on this, man?
Good for them. They deserve it. That's a lot of these games that are like, I wonder if people will start to see that a lot of these more successful games have been kind of built by passionate teams lately and not necessarily just driven by a committee. I heard something today, and I forget the name, but it was talking about the principle of like 80% of your productivity should be spent towards something company driven, and 20% of your time should be spent on passion projects, and that companies that do that, like Google, have seen huge results because of that. And I think that may be actually part of the answer, that maybe we start giving developers time, even paid time, to develop some of their passion projects in exchange for, you know, partial rights or exclusive rights to publish or whatever the fuck you do. I'm not really sure, but like, let's give people some opportunity to maybe do some other things, because the big mega game doesn't work, and the games that do seem to work are ones that are made by people who really enjoy what they do.
Yeah. And what's going on with the whole modding situation? Apparently, they're like working on official mods, but I heard some people were upset about that. I don't know if anybody has seen anything about that.
Why would people be upset about that?
That's why I'm confused. Like, what are you guys upset about? You know, like, I thought you liked mods, you know? Anyway, so yeah, that mods are. But aren't people already making mods for this game? Or is it just like official? Is that what these guys are talking about?
I think they're talking about something official.
Okay, yeah, there it is. Yeah, so it doesn't have official mod support yet. That's what.
No, okay. So if I'm understanding correctly, if you're talking about what I think they're talking about, is they don't have an open creation system within the game. And that's important because the game so well builds off D&D that there's not a tool that will allow D&D players like DMs to build a campaign inside of it. And you should just be able to. Like, you have access to all like the models, all the data, all the health bars, all the items. Like, a DM should be able to use those tools to pretty quickly augment or build entire campaigns around it. So it can be like a tool. And then this is like the big thing. Like, Wizards of the Coast is super paranoid about this because they just released a thing that is basically an inferior version of that. It's you know, an electronic tabletop. So like, you can like move animated characters around and set them down, but it still feels like tabletop, whereas Baldur's Gate is a pretty good hybrid. So if you gave DMs full control of Baldur's Gate, it could cripple the things that Wizards is doing, which is problematic because Wizard is the one that gave them the license. So it's all a bit of a clusterfuck, and people have already been trying to break open Baldur's Gate so that DMs could use this tool, but having an officially sanctioned, like, creative build a campaign tool in Baldur's Gate, like I said, would kind of be a shorthand, not just for Baldur's Gate, but for D&D in general. So even people who never would want to play Baldur's Gate might buy it just for that mod to be able to use with their D&D group. Understand?
Yeah. Interesting. So okay, that, I guess that makes sense, yeah.
That's the big thing that I'm understanding.
Yeah, I think that's what it was, yeah. But yeah, no, regardless, games obviously huge success. Won Game of the Year, I believe, at the Keeley Awards. So, you know, there you go. Good stuff. Oh, by the way, real quick, since we're on the subject of D&D, Brett, you'll appreciate this about Helldivers. Apparently, there's one developer there called Joel who's like apparently pulling the strings behind the scenes like a D&D dungeon master, you know, of the war that's happening within the game, you know?
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah. That's what this company described. I was like, yeah, this guy's our dungeon master. Like, cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, because they want certain things to sort of happen. So, like, the point in Helldivers is to stop the incoming outside forces, you know, the synths and the bug aliens. And every time you go on there, they're either closer or they're taking more and more and more. So what they do is they're probably just controlling the narrative a little bit, or a little like how much is going in or what things they're taking over and stuff like that.
So wait, is Helldivers like supposed to be one big progressive war or something? Like, what's going on?
That's what it's that? It's like one giant. Yeah. It's go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I was going to ask, has anybody played this game? Because I know little about it other than it's some online game. That's all I know about it. And it's basically like a love letter to Starship Troopers or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the original game was like that as well. Where it's like it's very much like it gives the impression that it's a persistent online game. Where in other words, like, but there it is sort of controlled, which I think is which sort of factors into some of their, you know, the additional things that they want to add on or add-ons to the game. So it's like, you know, maybe something takes over this one area and then maybe something new happens. So they have, it looks like they just have a guy that literally just flips a switch and says, oh, this scenario is happening now. And he's probably doing it based off of the metadata that's happening from the game. So let's say, like, I guess, there's a lot of people seem to maybe like fighting the bugs more than the synths. So maybe he'll push the synths a little further because the game is actually, you know, because people have not been paying attention to them, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool stuff.
It's a system, you know, of like,
yeah, go ahead, Brian.
Of like how it operates. So it's very community driven. So as more people liberate planets, then obviously like the neighboring planets also get exposed for liberation, and that's how it kind of expands. So it's kind of the whole community is working together to kind of liberate different planets and expand democracy through the, I guess, the solar system. I don't know, but through the map, I guess, or through the region of
The main thing is you're trying to stop all these different outside forces from coming and taking over Super Earth, which, by the way, it's called Super Earth because the original Earth was destroyed and they made another Earth.
Yeah. Brian, have you played Helldivers?
Nope. I'm off playing Brian games. So I will guarantee you that you'll be shocked to hear what game I'm playing now, because it's a game that
Overwatch Simulator.
It's a game that none of you will even think that I would be playing. And just to help you out, it is not a game Sonic that came out in the last 5 years.
Wait, say that again. Manny, you cut him off. Say that again, Brian.
Yeah, it's a game that none of you guys can, I bet none of you guys can even begin to think of what the game is. And just to help you, it's not a game that's come out this generation at all.
Yeah, I probably, exactly. I would have no idea then.
You're playing it's Dragon Guard 3.
Dragon Guard 3?
See?
Exactly. I just had
Yoko Taro.
Yeah. Ever since the Stellar Blade person said, yeah, Yoko Taro, like, he's a huge influence of mine. So I thought, okay, you know what, since I've some pseudo time to kill and I want to get into Nier Automata, I thought, okay, let me play Dragon Guard 3 and then take things from there. So yeah.
Play Nier Replicant after that.
That will be after. And then into Nier Automata and yeah.
Though I would say Nier Automata doesn't, you playing Nier Automata on its own and also Replicant, thing about those two games is you can pretty much play those games and not need to know what's happened in the original game and the games that are sort of connected, but you will find yourself enriched if you do, because there's a lot of connections between them.
Yeah, and it's mostly just to see how his style has changed over time, to again see what ideas he had, what things he took and it evolved them, you know, so, like playing the Halo games, you know, like you play the first couple and last couple and you kind of see like what they took, what they didn't, and then you kind of see Destiny and it's like, okay, you can see the Halo influences in Destiny, so it's kind of the same idea that I had. It's like, okay, I want to see if there's like Dragon Guard ideas in Nier Automata or Replicant ideas in Nier Automata to see what ideas stuck, what ideas did not, you know. So that's all. So yeah, Dragon Guard 3, because why not? And at some point I'll be playing Pacific Drive.
There you go. I think that's actually a kind of good segue to what we've been playing, but I need to talk about Dragon Guard 3 real quick because I got a story about that.
Reviewed it.
I did review it. I reviewed it for Dual Shockers, and that was the last game I received, a review game that was physical. Right? The last physical game. And I'm glad, because FedEx is usually the one that handle that stuff and FedEx sucks. Right? So basically, they sent the game, claimed I wasn't home, even though I was, and they sent it to their shipping facility in Maspeth, New York. Now, I lived in Flushing at the time. Maspeth is really far from Flushing, right? Ironically, it's close to where I live now, Long Island City. It took me like a good hour and a half to get out there by bus. And you know, it's funny, I was thinking about this the other day. I know that day on the bus, I was texting Rich about something, but I couldn't remember. This was over 10 years ago. And I remember complaining about that. I'm like, yo, Rich, I'm going to this fucking place to pick up this game, you know? So I get the game and I hated it. I beat the game. And I thought that it was just mindless fucking hack and slash. And the story made no fucking sense. I didn't like the graphics. I gave it a really bad score. I'm like, this game sucks. And I got eviscerated in the comments section. Ah, why didn't they get a reviewer that actually likes these type of games? And I'm like, I was the only one available, bruh, and I have to do my job here. So because of that game, I was very hesitant about Nier Automata. I'm like, I don't know about this. But when I heard Platinum Games was doing the combat, I'm like, okay, it's Platinum Games, you know? Even though I've had some issues with Platinum Games, I never had a problem with their combat, their gameplay, fantastic. And sure enough, Nier Automata became one of my favorite games. So, yeah, Dragon Guard, I didn't like that game at all. It had like 50 fucking different endings. Like, Jesus, like, when is this game going to end? You know, I just wanted the misery to be done. PS3 game, I believe it was, I was playing at the time. Yeah, I mean, Brian, I hope you enjoyed it, because I had to suffer through that fucking game. I did not like it at all, you know? Anyway, I'll move on to me. What have I been playing lately? You already know, man. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. That's been the game I've been playing pretty much all month, you know? Because, again, my time is kind of limited. I can only play like 2 or 3 hours a night, so I've just been, you know, and then there's, you know, personal shit going on. I can't play indoor weekends, but I'll tell you this. I'm on the final boss, and I've been on the final boss for 2 days. Like, that shit is long, son, you know? But, yeah, the game is dope. Again, the only thing that kind of bugs me, as I said in my review, I thought there were way too many mini games, and some of the open world stuff seemed like superfluous, like it was just there for fluff. But the actual core of the game, fucking awesome, you know? It's great. It's one of those games also I cannot wait to play on PC, because I have now hit the point where the PS5's performance is bugging me, you know? Because, and I've said this will happen too, I said, when we get games that are only made for PS5, we're probably going to have to deal with 30 FPS again, you know? Yes, there's performance mode and all that, but I'm like, I don't want to choose, man. It's like, I don't...
Blurry-ass performance mode,
they fixed that, by the way. They finally fixed it.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they fixed it.
It was like that in the demo.
Yeah, they patched it on February 21st. They patched the demo, It's funny, but you know, okay. So it was so blurry, I had to just force myself to just play it on quality mode, and my eyes adjusted to it or whatever. But I just find it funny that they finally fixed it when I was like 50 hours in. I'm like 70 hours in. I'm like, God, really now? Like, I'm not going back. Mm-hmm. You know, what's up, Carlos?
Oh, by the way, before any of that, shout out to Toonmatic for subscribing.
Yeah, Toonmatic. That's our boy Michael Santiago. Let's fucking go.
Thanks.
You know? Yeah.
Congrats to you and your new, I believe it was a daughter he had. So shout out to him.
Oh, excuse me.
You know, shout out to Michael, man.
Yeah, good it was guy. Like two, last year or the year before, 2022.
What?
Something like that.
No, there's still baby girl. She was born, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, shout out to him. But anyway, yeah, Final Fantasy VII. So playing it, game is good stuff, man. But I
so really, performance mode is the way to go, right?
No, go to quality mode.
Quality mode,
yeah, quality mode, okay. Yeah, because performance mode is it's like upscaled 1440p, whereas quality mode is like upscaled 1800p. It looks better. Like even though they patched it, it's still blurry, you know, in performance mode. You know how how we kind of just had to deal with quality mode in Final Fantasy 16 because it just looked better than performance mode. Same deal,
yep.
Which is interesting because they're running on two different engines, you know, but the same kind of problem persists, you know. But yeah, the game's dope. And so that was me. Manny, have you been playing anything lately?
Not well. No, actually, been playing. I did play a little bit of the demo. I'm impressed with that demo. That the fact that they put a save in it. You know, like you can actually save in the game.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, I'm still wondering if it has anything, if anything's things that you do in that game and that, demo can go over into the main game. But, the other thing the main sort of game I've been playing is I've been playing Evil West for, PlayStation. The funny thing about this, I think I might've said this before, I bought that game, a while ago. It was one of the early purchases for PlayStation 5 that I did. I bought Evil West and I bought, you know, obviously I pre-ordered Spider-Man and all that stuff. So, funny thing is that when I finally got to playing Evil West, it's already on the PlayStation Network and, you know, as a free game. So I'm like, all right, I guess I don't need to bust open my copy, but at least I supported them. Right. So yeah, that's happened now. It's very much a sort of a throwback sort of game, you know. I think Adam said this too, where it was like it's, you know, although when I played it, I was expecting it to be a little bit more Gears of War-y, but it's actually not. It's more melee-y, you know, like where you have guns and stuff like that, but you don't. They don't you don't need to worry about, like, you know, how many bullets you have. You got, your character literally has unlimited bullets, and they're, and the guns literally just keep, you know, as long, they only, all the guns just have cooldowns, so that you just, you know, they have, they cool down, and then you're, then you can shoot more. That's about it. But yeah, that's, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Guy is very much a, you know, older video game protagonist with the gruff voice and the, you know, it's a little fun. It's fun and absurd in that way. So yeah, it's quite a good time I'm having.
Cool. Carlos, what have you been playing lately?
Nothing, but I'm starting Final Fantasy tomorrow.
Oh, so, shit.
Yeah,
after,
man.
Dune?
After Dune. Yeah, most definitely. So I can't wait to get into that. Obviously, I love Remake. And, you know, after all the things that everyone's been talking about, Tony included,
yeah, yeah.
Sounds like it's going to be a heck of a ride. So can't wait.
Good stuff. Brett, what are you playing right now?
Playing Power World and Baldur's Gate.
Nice, nice. Anything you want to add to those that you haven't said already?
But nope, both fantastic. Play them.
There you go. Brian, anything else you're playing besides Dragon Guard?
Not really. But just to add, I have gone through and finished, well, I say finished, quote unquote, finished Pal World, defeated all the bosses and got all the Chivos. And yeah, it was really fun. And last boss really does test you. So, yeah, well done to them.
Good stuff. Chris, what have you been playing lately?
I actually been playing Pacific Drive. I call it No Man's Road.
No Man's Road?
Yeah. I mean, it like, it's funny because Kristen was watching me play it, and she's like, I was like, man, I love just driving around in this game and like scavenging stuff, whatever. She's like, yeah, it's like what you did with No Man's Sky. I'm like, that's brilliant. This is No Man's Road. This is what it is. Like, you're in this area, you get sucked into this zone, and you need to drive around. Like, it's a survival game, but you have a car, and you have to take care of it and whatnot. And you go to all these different points of the map, and, you know, it's like in No Man's Sky, when you warp to a different system, and you go to a planet, yeah, and you have to scavenge for stuff. So it's like that, but it's much more toned down. Everything is more direct. Like, you have certain routes to go, and you have missions to go on. And it's not like get to the center of the universe. It's not that big. So the game is manageable. I'm enjoying it so far. I like customizing the car. You could build all this crazy tech and put on it. And it's some areas, it's like driving. It's like if I took a station wagon and drove through an area of Elden Ring is what some of the areas look like. It's like the plants are red. The trees are craggly. There's like fucking shit attacking your car everywhere. There's stone pillars raining from the sky and all this stuff. It's like nuts. So I'm really digging the game. I do recommend if you like that stuff. But there's no enemies. There's no like monsters, right, that you directly fight. There's kind of just all these anomalies and weird shit. Mostly the environment is the enemy, right? You're just trying to survive.
All right. And Rich, what have you been playing lately? That you could publicly talk about.
that I can publicly talk about. Well, let me start off by saying this. I have started to play Dragon's Dogma on PS5. And I want to say this. I'm enjoying the game so far, but I do want to make it very clear. This is a game where I wish I had a PC because, you know, they did not update this game for PS5. I was expecting there to be some performance update or something for the game. It isn't. So that's a bit of a, you know, it's hard to go back and play a PS4 game on PS5, you know, I guess you could say. But it is a very good game so far. So I'm looking forward to Dragon's Dogma 2 when it drops in March. Outside of that, as Tony mentioned, yeah, I am playing something I can't talk about yet, but I will talk about it the next time we have this conversation.
Yeah, and to that end, I also played something I cannot talk about, but I will be able to talk about that next week. And it may or may not be related to what Rich is talking about. But yes, we will be discussing some games next week. Anyway, continue, sir.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and the last thing, I did get back into Helldivers 2. The game is a lot of fun, but I want to emphasize again, you know, it's best to play with people that you know and can communicate with. Now, you can play with the normies, as you guys would say. I would not recommend that because certain people, when I did go into some of those matches, they just decide, well, I'm going to go off and do this. And then, of course, when they get killed, they're expecting you to revive them. I don't have time for that, man. I'm trying to complete the mission as a team. So I did get a chance to play. Well, I'm about to get a chance to play with our good friend Adam so we can test out the Steam Deck and the PlayStation 5, see how that goes. But what I played so far, I understand why the game is popular. The server issues have been resolved. So I would say if you are curious about the game, I would definitely think you should check it out just to see what all the hype is about. But yeah, so far, good times.
Good stuff, man. All right, that's going to do it for us. Another episode in the books. Couple of things we need to plug here. I'll start first. I don't know exact day, but there will be a Dune 2 podcast over on the Coalition, hosted by me and joined by others. Dana will be there. Carlos will be there, and maybe a couple other people. Should be good times. So we did a Dune podcast not too long ago. So now we're doing Dune 2, The Revenge. So should be good. Again, we haven't nailed down the exact time, but it probably will be Saturday night, you know. So should be good. Should be good stuff. Manny and I are going to go see it Saturday afternoon. So it'll be fresh in my mind, you know. So that's what's going on my end. And it's been about the Coalition. Rich, what's going on with you guys?
So first and foremost, as I mentioned previously, we did record the season premiere of The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live. You know, this is Carlos's favorite show. I definitely would encourage you all to check out that episode. You know, I thought it was so funny. We actually had one of the commenters is a guy that comments on our Power show. And I didn't even know he was a Walking Dead fan. So that's a pretty good lesson to learn, I would say. But yeah, if you are a Walking Dead fan, you're curious about the show, I would encourage you to check out the I Am Negan podcast. We will be recording the next episode this weekend. And as for the Coalition, there's a lot of things coming to the website. Obviously, right now, I want to give a shout out to Tatiana. She did a review in progress for Final Fantasy VII because we did receive a code, but she's still reviewing the game. But she does have a review in progress on the site right now. So if you are curious to hear some thoughts on the game, I would encourage you to check out the website. Outside of that, yes, there are a lot of other games that we are playing we cannot talk about yet, but I would encourage you to check out the website because March is going to be a very busy month on the website. I'm also going to be going to PAX East. I have no idea what to expect from that experience, so I will have something to say about that as well. But otherwise, yes, stay tuned. We got a lot of great things in the works.
Yeah, awesome stuff. An Invincible podcast will be returning very soon. We are already
in March. Yes.
So should be good times, man. And hopefully we won't have to wait another like 3 years or whatever for the next season. Oh man, good stuff. I wish I was going to PAX East, says Otaku Man. Yeah, people are heading over to PAX East. Rich, obviously, Boston. So, you know, that's a given. So good stuff. Hopefully I have something worth going. Like, I used to go to PAX East, but then, like, they started getting boring. But that 1 year we went, they had to have a lot of banger stuff, you know?
I'm going to be very honest right now and very candid. And a shout out to Otaku Man. Happy birthday. I just want to say this. I'm going to the show. I'm mainly going back to Boston to visit family, hang out with family. I am going to go to PAX East. But based on the emails that I have seen so far, I don't think this show is going to be anything different from what we have experienced the last couple of years. It hasn't really been that great of a show. There's a lot of titles that I am not familiar with, and that could be a good or bad thing, depending on when I actually see the games. But so far, I haven't seen anything exciting in my inbox. Now, let's see if that changes in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it may not. You know, but it's PAX East. You know, I'm not trying to talk shit. It's just, it's not E3, you know? That's just real stuff.
Even E3 is not even E3 anymore.
You know? I'm going to try to go to GDC and PAX East next year, says Otaku Man. That's what's up. Yeah, GDC is coming, you know, Game Developers Conference. So good stuff. Yep. Man, I have some interesting things to talk to about next week, man. Stay tuned, you know. I'll tell you guys off air, obviously. Anyway, man, we're done here. Make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter. Join the Discord where the conversations and the rumors always pop. And again, thank you guys for posting all that stuff on the Discord, because that's where I get all the news from. You know, it's just a nice way to just have everything right there. I don't have to keep up because, you know, busy with work. I don't always have time to check all the gaming news, but unless it's something major, then obviously I fucking know about it. But like some of the incidental stuff I may miss, but you guys keep me updated. So good stuff there. Also, Throwdown, we are on every podcast app on the planet. Throwdown Show. Two words, Throwdown Show. Throwdown Space Show. You know, you can find us. We're like everywhere. Spotify, fucking iTunes, Amazon, Samsung. Like you were everywhere. It's crazy. I didn't know Samsung had podcasts. You know, so one of my boys put me on. Like, oh shit, Throwdown needs to be on that. You know, ThrowdownShow.com to listen to past episodes. And of course, we are back on YouTube. So make sure you hit like, subscribe, and hit the bell to be notified of when we go live every Thursday and Sunday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern on the internet. Links to everything down below. Once again, I'm your host, Tony Polanco. And tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch.
This is...
It's been real. It's been a real part.
Peace.
There he is. Richard Bailey Jr.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
And, of course, Brian Mongioma.
One Punch Man Season 3 trailer is live.
One Punch Man!
You know? All right, guys, we'll see you on Sunday. Later.